You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Do you love the Tabernacle Choir? This year, the choir's music is everywhere you are. Listen to your favorite choir songs and music and the spoken word anytime you want on Alexa by simply enabling the skill.
Alexa, play the Tabernacle Choir.
Now playing the Tabernacle Choir.
You can also download the Tabernacle Choir app, subscribe to the choir on YouTube, listen on Spotify, and have access to all their wonderful music. Happy listening.
This is KSL's Religion Today, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner, on KSL News Radio.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today, I thought it would be fun to take a look at some amazing things. And this is just the tip of the iceberg, but some of the amazing things that were going on during the New Testament era that resulted in books that are just not part of our Bibles today. Now, why would this happen and why would this be important? Well, let's talk about a few of these. First of all, there were some books that never even made it into the New Testament, and these books were of immense value to many New Testament era Christians and Christians of the next several centuries. What am I talking about? Well, the Nag Hammadi Library has some fascinating books that would fit into that category. The Nag Hammadi Library has that name because it was found near the little town of Nag Hammadi, Egypt. It was found in 1946. It's called library because it's not just one book, but a series of books. And they are books, not scrolls. They're written on vellum, which is animal hide, and they were bound into books that had pages that would fold over. They were written by early Christians with some beliefs that are quite remarkable for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that in some ways they sound very much like the beliefs of Latter-day Saints today. Let me give you some examples. One of the books in the Nag Hammadi Library is called The Gospel of Thomas. Scholars around the world almost universally will say that the Gospel of Thomas has genuine words of Jesus that are not found in the Bible. Why is that important? What else would you put in the Bible that would be more important than the words of Jesus? And if you found new words of Jesus that were authentic, wouldn't that be a reason to expand the canon? Latter-day Saints believe that they have found additional words of Jesus in the Book of Mormon, as recorded in the Savior's advent here in the New World. Now the early Christians believed a similar thing. Not that Jesus appeared to them, but that he spoke certain things that during his lifetime on earth that were not recorded in the New Testament, and those are in the Gospel of Thomas. Another fascinating example is the Gospel of Philip, which is part of the Nag Hammadi Library again. It says or strongly implies that Jesus was married. To whom? Mary Magdalene. No big surprise there to Latter-day Saints or others. For some reason, many Christians are resistant to the idea that Jesus had a wife and was married. Latter-day Saints, not so much. although there's no official doctrine about that. Another Nag Hammadi library book that is fascinating, especially from an LDS perspective, is the Gospel of John. This is not our current New Testament Gospel of John. This is a different Gospel of John, which talks about a heavenly mother, or a mother in heaven, if you will, or a mother god, a mother Hebrew goddess. That is something that is quite remarkable. And we now know, according to many scholars of early Judaism and Christianity, that many strains of early Judaism believed that the God of the Jews had a wife. All right, on to another example of an amazing book, part of the early Christian genre of important books that's basically been lost to Christianity. I'm talking about The Secret Gospel of Mark, which was found by Columbia professor Morton Smith. The end of this book has been lost. We only have the beginning. There are those who believe it's a forgery. I even have a close friend who believes that. I do not share that opinion for a very important reason. And that reason is that I don't think it would have been possible for Morton Smith to research the details about the information that he places or that he found in The Secret Gospel of Mark. And this secret gospel is not found just in loose pages somewhere. This is in the back of a book that was found in St. Catherine's Monastery that dates to many, many, many centuries before the time of Morton Smith. And it would be impossible for him to have gone in there and taken that book out and somehow wrote with ink in an early Greek style somehow to forge this. I just don't buy that thinking or that style. Why is this such an important book, even though it's short and the end has been lost? Because it says that after Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, he taught him the mysteries of the kingdom of God and gave him something very much like we would describe as the temple endowment. That is pretty remarkable. That is a pretty incredible thing. If you read it, you will know. And there are translations of The Secret Gospel of Mark. Another fascinating aspect about the first few centuries after the time of Christ and his apostles is that there were books that were not part of our New Testament that are now included. 1 and 2 Timothy, Titus, Philemon, and Revelation are not found in the oldest and most nearly complete Bible manuscript that we have, the Codex Vaticanus. It was written around 300 AD. Doesn't have Revelation, Philemon, Titus, 1 and 2 Timothy. Why? Well, apparently they weren't considered authoritative by whoever put that together. It also has proof that New Testament manuscripts were being tampered with by the scribes. In the manuscript of one of its pages, it has this statement, quote, "Fool and knave, don't change the text, leave the original reading alone," close quote. That was something that one scribe wrote in the margins to try to dissuade later scribes from changing the text. Another fascinating example of changes to the Bible or how it's different now is that Codex Sinaiticus, which is the second oldest nearly complete Bible, has books in it that our current Bible It does not. I'm speaking about the Shepherd of Hermas, the Epistle of Barnabas, Didache, Sirach, 1st and 2nd Maccabees, Tobit. These are all books that were part of Codex Sinaiticus, but we don't have them anymore. They were important to New Testament Christians, but they were taken out. One of my favorites in this little collection is the Shepherd of Hermas. It's just absolutely brilliant and wonderful, but it's not part of the New Testament anymore. When we come back from our break, we'll talk more about some fascinating information about the New Testament. Stay tuned. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Religion Today with host Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. Today we're talking about the New Testament and about things that have changed during the New Testament era so that our Christianities that we have today are somewhat different from the Christianities that were out there during the first several centuries of the Christian faith. One of the most fascinating stories is that we have a different Bible today. Most translations, well, I shouldn't say most, but many translations of the Bible that are relied upon and have been relied upon by Christians since the 4th century come from a translation by Jerome called the Latin Vulgate. Jerome wrote a new Bible that he translated. It was written and entirely decorated by hand. And Jerome somehow thought he could produce a better Bible. He was somewhat of an arrogant man. Before Jerome's 384 AD Latin Vulgate, what was the Bible? It was the Septuagint. Few people today use the Septuagint, and yet that is the Bible, Old Testament and New Testament, that Jesus and the apostles and the early Christians all used. Many times in our current Bibles, you will see some phrase that says, "And as the prophets of old stated, but you go back and try to find it, and it's not there. Why? Because it's not in Jerome's Vulgate, but it was in the Septuagint. If you actually had the Septuagint, you could find that quote. There are many examples like that. The Vulgate had problems, so did the Septuagint, but the Septuagint was the Bible that Jesus and the apostles and the early Christians used. Let's talk about another fascinating tidbit of New Testament era. I'm talking about one of the great, great sleepers, if you will, of Christianity. The first person to translate almost the entire Bible into English was John Wycliffe. This was before the printing press. Wycliffe was born in 1328. He died in 1384. He was an Oxford scholar. He was a brilliant man. He was considered by the Catholic Church to be a heretic. Why? In part because he translated the Bible into English. And what he translated was quite spectacular. And it was the first opportunity that English speakers had to actually read the Bible in their own native language. Now, this was before the printing press, so again, it was not widely read, but it was an amazing breakthrough and a milestone. After Wycliffe, Tyndale came along. He was born in 1494. He died in 1536. The printing press was invented in 1440, so William Tyndale's Bible was the first one that was done with a printing press, which made all the copies uniform, and it was also small, easy to read, and it was a huge, instant bestseller. People everywhere were reading it, and Tyndale did such a great job of translating that later on, the King James translators just used, because they couldn't improve on it, 83% of Tyndale's New Testament translation, word for word, and 76% of Tyndale's Old Testament translation, word for word. That's what you have in the King James Bible. That's a remarkable accomplishment that Tyndale had. How important, how remarkable? You, I'm sure, use many words that Tyndale came up with, and you don't even know it. Jehovah is a good example. Wycliffe, the earlier translator, just left alone as the Tetragrammaton, the Hebrew Tetragrammaton, YHWH. That was not good enough for Tyndale, who thought that there ought to be a word that was easier to pronounce. Today's scholars pronounce it Yahweh. Tyndale came up with the English transliteration Jehovah. So Tyndale is responsible for us using the word Jehovah as the name of God. He also came up with the word Passover. Before that, in Wycliffe's translation, you had the phrase, the passing over. Wycliffe called it this phrase, but Tyndale wanted a word. He came up with Passover. Wycliffe talked about the goat that was used to escape with sins. He called it the goat sent out to escape. Tyndale called it the scapegoat. And probably the most important of all examples is the word atonement. William Tyndale came up with that word to mean at one meant. Before that, it was translated reconciliation or to reconcile. Wycliffe's New Testament translation just says reconciliation. I shouldn't say just, because that's really the gist of the meaning. But Tyndale thought it meant so much more. And he, as a result, said, I'm going to call what Jesus did for us the atonement, because it makes us one with God. That was his thinking behind it. It's brilliant. It's wonderful. We had this other example that I always like. Wycliffe's translation of Jesus' prayer, his famous prayer, do not tempt us, but instead keep us from evil. William Tyndale, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Wycliffe came up with the phrase in the twinkling of an eye. He came up with the phrase, let there be light in Genesis. Wycliffe's translation said, quote, God said, light be made, close quote. Not quite the same. Others, my brother's keeper, the powers that be, filthy lucre, gave up the ghost. Wycliffe just said died. Another fascinating one, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. That famous saying, of the New Testament, Wycliffe's translation prior, the spirit is ready, but the flesh frail. Doesn't quite have the same impact, does it? Tyndale was just a brilliant man for translating the Bible. He was executed. Quite tragic. We know from many of the early manuscripts of the Bible that books are missing. Endings have been lost. There were unintentional translations. There were translations that have been deliberately changed. And we also have bogus editions. The Bible indeed has been changed in some pretty dramatic ways. The Bible is wonderful, but don't ever think that it is somehow sacrosanct and perfect. I hope you've enjoyed this broadcast. Join me again next week when we talk about more things religious. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today on KSL.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save.